under advisement. Move to the next case of the morning. Kikundu versus Gonzalez. Yes. I didn't mean I pronounced it right, but that's what I said.
I'm not sure I am either, Your Honor. May it please the Court, good morning, Your Honors. Judge Coffey, Judge Mannion, Judge Rovner, and counsel for the Office of Immigration Litigation. My name is Stephen Berman, and I represent the petitioner, Robert Kikundu, and a petition for review of a decision of the Executive Office for Immigration Review. The petitioner, Mr. Kikundu, is a 34-year-old man from Uganda. He was married, actually. His wife died. He has a son who's living in Ethiopia, a 6-year-old. He entered the United States September 5th, 2001, on a visitor's visa. The petitioner claims that he fears persecution in Uganda based on his activities on behalf of Kizza Besigye, who was a former colonel and a member of, quote-unquote, the movement, the ruling regime since 1986, in the election in 2001. Petitioner testified that he was asked to join Kizza Besigye's reform agenda in the election because of his background in printing. He had been in the printing profession since 1986, and he had his own firm. And so the petitioner agreed to use his skills on behalf of the campaign, and he did. He printed T-shirts and cups, flyers, brochures, and other items in support of the Reform Agenda's campaign, and he also they hired him and paid him to review the voter registration cards so that he could help them determine which ones may have been fraudulent, and he did so. Well, Mr. Besigye lost the election. The government won. And several months later, the petitioner, along with many other supporters of Besigye, he was taken into custody in his town, a village outside of, not part of the capital city, Masaga, is the name of the district. He was taken into custody not by the police and not charged with a crime, but rather by what they call the local defense units. These are people who wear blue uniforms that are not under any legal authorization. They're not connected with the police force, but they and the army help the government, quote-unquote, control rural areas and operate outside of the law and hold secret, undisclosed detention centers, and they're what the government uses for people to disappear. Petitioner was taken into custody and found himself with some other people who were all also part of the CGA campaign, as he discovered. And he was held from July 7th through the 17th, during which time he was beaten and caned and punched and hit, and he describes in detail all the things they did to him when interrogating them. While they were interrogating him, they scolded him for supporting the CGA. They mentioned his ingratitude. He'd done so well under the current regime. How dare he support an opponent? It's a sign of disloyalty. And furthermore, that they know he must have information about Besigye's treasonous activities, that he wants to go to war against the country, and could he please tell them what he's doing in order to do that? After suffering this treatment, by good luck, he was being transported together with a group of other prisoners to another site, and the tire exploded, the lorry, the vehicle they were in, overturned, and the prisoners escaped. The petitioner, he ran on foot to a nearby town, which he knew, where he lived in the past, and where he had a friend. His friend took him in, treated him with supplies from the dispensary. Several days later, he moved to a different town where he went to a doctor for proper treatment and where he was treated for his injuries, and the medical reports were submitted into the evidence.
The IJ focused on his credibility.
Yes.
And that seems to be a pivotal problem.
That's the issue. The immigration judge found that the petitioner was not credible, and we submit to the court that the bases that the immigration judge cites do not provide a cogent reason, a basis in the record to find not credible.
Did he purchase his passport?
Did he buy a passport?
Right.
He did. What does Your Honor mean by purchase?
By bribing an official.
He didn't say that. He didn't say he bribed anybody. He did say that he paid money and he got a passport and that his friends obtained it for him. The record's not totally clear on that. He asserts that it's his real passport and his name. So I don't know. He doesn't say that. I don't believe, Your Honor. The judge gives several reasons for why she finds petitioner not credible. The first of them relate to the duration of his confinement. Now, the asylum application contains a page and a half written statement about what happened to the petitioner. He states he was held for 3 weeks, and a couple sentences later he describes those 3 weeks as July 7th through July 17th. Now, the medical report also states that the petitioner was detained in the first week of July and held for 3 weeks. And, of course, he was at the doctor at July 23rd. Now, in American usage, we concede. We don't call that 3 weeks. It is during the first, second, and third week in July, but we don't call that 3 weeks.
Why does it matter what we call it when he consistently specified the very same days?
It shouldn't
even matter. His arrest, his imprisonment, his doctor visits in his application and testimony.
It shouldn't even matter. If it's all consistent, if it all says the same thing, it doesn't tend to show that the applicant is making up a story. It's not relevant. It doesn't provide a cogent reason to find him not credible. So that, the first reason the judge gives, doesn't provide a cogent reason. I'm already getting into my rebuttal time. I have little else. Regarding his vagueness about speaking out, petitioner testified his main activities was as a printer, not as speaking out. So being vague about a peripheral activity also doesn't tend to show that he's making up a story. And regarding the date that he left the country, the judge says, well, September 3rd is a Monday. Petitioner testified 5 a.m. on September 3rd, we call a Sunday. 5 a.m. Monday is the weekend to us. The judge found that not credible and not plausible. I'm getting into my rebuttal time, but we urge that all of the judge's citations, they just don't make any sense, and they're not enough to find him not credible. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Simpkins.
Christopher Simpkins for Attorney General Gonzalez. Want to make three brief points. One is a very brief point about the standard review, and it's a legal point. Want to address the credibility issue that's been raised. And third, I want to briefly address an event that occurred in Uganda over this weekend that has a direct bearing on this appeal that I hope the court will take judicial notice of. The standard of review. The problem petitioner makes is that he's asking this court to reweigh the evidence and to make an initial determination about whether the evidence is credible, but that is not what the court is to do here. The standard that is set out in both statute and by Supreme Court authority is that a credibility finding, which is a finding of fact, can only be overturned if petitioner can point to evidence in the record that compels the contrary conclusion. If there is any reasonable evidence in the record on which the immigration judge relied, petitioner cannot prevail here. And I submit, and this is really my second point, there is evidence in the record that can reasonably be read to show he was not credible.
Unfortunately, none of it that the IJ relied on. If there is other, I'm unaware of it. But, she She faulted him for vague testimony. We haven't seen many cases of late where the testimony was as definite as we have here.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with that, because the testimony and the documentary evidence here is replete with inconsistencies that are not just trivial, not just technical, but go to whether we can really believe his story. For example, on the vagueness on the speaking out issue, the petitioner's asylum application, when he lays out his story for why he is persecuted politically, relies on printing and doing T-shirts and brochures, and it's the point that petitioner's counsel just made. The problem is that when it comes to his testimony, when he's pressed in his testimony about why he is persecuted politically, and it's at page 176 in the administrative record, asked, why were you persecuted? Because I was speaking out vocally about the democratic movement. I was an outspoken vocal opponent. So apparently his theory switches. He's given the opportunity to clarify, you know, tell me about why you were speaking out, when you were speaking out, give me some times and places. Oh, I don't know, just kind of wherever I was.
Quite a number of several. Any time I got, any chance I got, any platform, be it in a church, be it in a gathering on a village, be it on any social gathering in a bar where I used to go and socialize, any chance, any time that would, I would find an audience that would listen to that. I did so. Okay, questioner says. Okay, in other words, his answer is responsive. Perhaps it may be viewed as incomplete, but that is because the government was apparently satisfied and didn't ask another question. The government went on to an entirely new series of questions.
Your Honor, I believe that questioning was at the applicant's own petitioner's insistence. And even if you take that he answered that question, I spoke out at churches, at social gatherings, then, and if that's the crux of why he was persecuted politically, then why didn't he make that the center point of his application when he applied for asylum? It's not even mentioned. The only point that goes to supporting his political opposition is, I print T-shirts.
Well,
then when
it comes
to
that,
testimony,
the cups and T-shirts and whatever else he was doing, the little stuff that they'd pass out. So he's exclusively identified with that, isn't he?
Excuse me?
He would be exclusively identified with that, I assume, a proponent of the candidate.
You're correct, Your Honor, but then when it comes to his testimony, page 176 of the record on the hearing, why were you persecuted? Not because I'm a printer. His explanation was, because I speak out.
Did he ever identify any date when he spoke out or any specific place?
No, he did not.
Did the government
ask him?
He was given a full opportunity to explain there, and quite frankly, I can't remember.
He was not. The government said okay. The prosecutor said okay and started an entirely new line of questioning. He was not. Prosecutors ask questions. Individuals answer questions that they are asked.
Your Honor, again, I believe the record is that line of questioning that you're pointing to is his own counsel questioning him, not the prosecutor. But in any event, the government is not urging the court here to re-weigh that evidence in the first instance.
You're correct, but that's where the prosecution comes in. The prosecution crosses.
I understand that, Your Honor, and you can fault the INS attorney for not going in that further. But based on the record that is there, there is at least credible evidence that the immigration judge relied on. His story switches. His story is one thing in the asylum application. His story is another thing when he testifies. And that seems to me to be at least a reasonable basis.
Why can't we view it as consecutive stories, as global?
Perhaps that is one way to explain it, but unfortunately the record is what it is, and that is not how he explained it. When asked, why do you speak out, or why were you a political persecutee? Because I spoke out. And that's inconsistent with what he said in his asylum application. Further, this is not the only credibility problem. If we were to focus solely on this, maybe the court comes out different, but it's one of a series of problems.
Do you really believe that whether he said it's 5 o'clock in the difference between 5 o'clock in the morning or Sunday night is that's really a credibility problem?
It absolutely is, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. And it's central. Bear with me, because it's central to the story he tells and the theory of asylum. His theory is, I was persecuted as a political opponent by this LDU unit. And not only was I imprisoned, but they hunted me down. They went into my house afterwards. They searched for me. So the story is, he's able to obtain a passport and get out of the country. He says in his asylum application that he left on a Sunday morning at 5 a.m., when in fact it was a Monday morning. And the reason it's important is because the question was put to him, and here the INS attorneys were a little more competent in questioning. Why were you able to get out of the country so easily when the person you supported frequently was stopped at the airports and was tailed? How can you get out under your own name, under your own passport? And the answer, which is critical here, is it's because I did it on a weekend. I did it on a Sunday, and everyone knows that the lax security occurs over the weekend. So when the fact is that it is Monday morning versus Sunday morning, and he can quibble about how you may talk about Sunday or Monday, but there is nothing in the record to support his notion that that the weekend security guards were still in place Monday morning at 5 a.m., but that's supposedly when the...
Maybe the shift changes at 6 a.m.
And perhaps, Your Honor, but quite frankly, there's nothing in the record to help us there. And it is his burden. It is his burden to put it in the record if that's going to be the case. The immigration judge had what she had in front of her and had to make a decision. My time is almost up, but I have to address the events over the weekend. The very basis of this appeal is that he can't go back because of the movement is in place in Uganda.
May I ask if you've told your opponent that this is going to be a brand new argument here?
It's I have not, because it appeared in the newspaper this morning.
Well,
and
well, you'll have to supplement something. I don't know how to bring that in. That's something new, but put that in writing and we'll deal with it.
Well, I will certainly make an additional submission to the court based on the political change.
As additional authority or something.
I will cite it as additional authority. I will consult with counsel. Essentially, the political climate has changed and his party is now recognized.
Well, but so, we're dealing with things that happened.
Unfortunately.
And you're dealing with things that may or may not have happened yesterday.
You're absolutely right.
I myself,
right.
You know,
you're absolutely
worry
right.
About the media.
You're absolutely right, and I submit that I can support it through both our State Department and through official Ugandan channels. But nevertheless, whether you decide on that basis or not, the credibility issue still stands, and you may quibble with how the immigration judge came out on those credibility decisions, but it is petitioner's obligation to point to evidence that not just comes out 50-50 or maybe even 75-25, but compels the opposite conclusion. Sunday versus Monday is important because it goes directly to his story about how he was able to get out under lax security over the weekend. The length of his detention goes directly to his story about how he was persecuted. My time's up.
Go to any bar on Rush Street and you'll see that 5 a.m. Monday morning is the weekend.
And Your Honor, that is in the United States, and maybe he could have put that in the record, and he could have supplemented it after the hearing, and he was directly questioned on it. But unfortunately, he's just let the inconsistency stand, and that is unfortunately to his detriment. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Simpson. I'm sorry, Mr. Berman.
Okay, I have to be very brief. First of all, we are not asking the court to reweigh the evidence. Rather, we're asking the court to engage in its usual analysis whether the immigration judge's decision is supported by substantial evidence. If her finding of credibility is not supported by cogent and specific reasons, which it isn't, the decision should not be upheld because it isn't supported by substantial evidence. With regard to page 176 of the record, I did have time to look it up. It is the Immigration Services lawyer who asked the question, and the applicant never mentions anything about churches and platforms in that statement anyway. It's very much not on point. With regard to the whole security issue, how did you get out of the country? First of all, this is a question calling for speculation. It doesn't even make sense. And that's the first thing the applicant said to the judge. It doesn't make sense. Why shouldn't I get out of the country? Kizé Besigye also got out of the country. What makes you think I shouldn't get out of the country? If you want me to speculate, he offers speculation. And the speculation he offers makes sense. It does. The LDUs are illegal. They're not authorized by law. There's nothing in the record to suggest they share a database with the police, and petitioner said he didn't think they did. What they're doing is supposed to be not known and not documented. That's what they're for. He offered, his explanation made perfect sense, but in any case, it's asking him to speculate. He has no burden to speculate and to satisfy the judge about a purely conjectural issue.
But the LDUs are attributable to the government, I presume.
They're part of the Ministry of Internal Affairs.
Okay.
Any other questions, Your Honor? Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.